Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 7, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So we had an interesting weekend. So since I recorded my last show, I recorded a while ago, it was Memorial Day, and I wound up riding 86K with some friends in honor of my dad's 86th birthday, my dad's 86th heavenly birthday. So northeastern Connecticut is gorgeous right now because the combination of sun and rain, everything's very lush. I think we have families of many small critters living in our yard.
Especially rabbits.
I'm very sad because we had flagged off what we thought were brown-eyed Susans, and the brown-eyed Susans are clearly being eaten by something or someone.
Rabbits.
And we think, yeah, we haven't seen the woodchuck, so although maybe there is a woodchuck,
we have seen
the big fat rabbit, and so we're wondering if the rabbit is enjoying the brown-eyed Susans. I just hope that some of the brown-eyed Susans manage to grow.
Eventually.
I'm sad about that.
Yeah.
Maybe the rabbit will get tired.
Or find something else to eat.
I don't know. I'm excited because I've seen the catbird, and I went riding with my friend Martin yesterday, and I turned him on to the Merlin app so he could learn the bird calls. And when we were in our yard, and I recognized the eastern towhee, and I said, listen, that's the eastern towhee. And he said, hey, when he got home and he texted me, he said, I've got one in my yard. And I said, great, so go download the app so you can learn all the bird calls. And, you know, when we stop in North Windham, we took some pictures. We stopped, again, because I think the tradition is if you're on that section of trail in North Windham, you have to stop the bog and check the blue heron status.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
You see the little head sticking
out
of the nest.
So when we stopped, there wasn't anything to see, and we waited a minute or so, and then we saw... They were not so little anymore.
No.
There were great big mamas there and somewhat big babies in a couple of nests. It was very exciting. So if you want to go to North Windham Rail Trail in the bog there on the North Windham end, either end is North Windham, but the one that's closer to the paved section, there's a bog there and you can go check out the great blue herons there and the nests. And then that was exciting. The rhododendrons were blooming. I think I missed the rhododendrons. I want to let you know that the mountain laurels, there are places at lower elevations where they are peaking now. On Saturday, I rode Ride the East. I marshaled it. So they gave me a vest and everything. And I don't know why they let me marshal it because I was very slow getting up the hills on the Charter Oak, climbing up to Bolton Notch. But then once I got on the Hop River Trail, I was okay. So it's a great big 49-mile ride where you start at Manchester Community College. You ride the Charter Oak Trail from there all the way to Bolton Notch. Then they give you some nice bars. They had a really nice selection of bars, including gluten-free ones, like those RX bars, and they had Lara bars. And they had some Cliff bars, too. And they gave you water and stuff. There's a porta potty there. And then we rode the entire length of the Hot River Trail from Bolton Notch to the Railroad Museum. Well, you know, you have to get off at Kings Road and then you take that little cut off that goes to the bridge. So they routed us on there and then you go over the bridge and now you're on the Willimantic River Waterway. And so we rode by there and we took that to the Railroad Museum where there was another rest stop and they actually let you into the Railroad Museum. And there was a guy there that was taking a lady and her kid. You know those things that go on a railroad track that you pump a lever up and down?
Yeah.
I thought that was just a Bugs Bunny or a Wile E. Coyote thing.
It's a hand car.
Yeah. And there was a real guy on it and I went to take a picture. But when I got my camera ready, they had already gone down the track. And then they came back, and my friend told me, go get him! And
You should have gone for a ride on it. It's fun.
Well, that would have taken more time, but that's okay.
Yeah, I know, but that would have been fun.
So, big shout out to my new friend, Jonathan Goldman, who rode with me. He picked me up. Well, I caught up to him on the trail, and then we rode the rest of the ride together, and he just regaled me with stories of his life and all kinds of interesting stuff, and we found out that we had mutual friends. Our friends Randy and Matt were mutual friends of ours. So he just regaled me with stories, and if I had not ridden with him, I might have turned back because I was feeling tired, but he inspired me to go the whole route, and we rode all the way to the Connecticut Railroad Museum, back on the Hop River, all the way back to Bolton Notch, and then instead of going back the Charter Oak, they have you continue on towards Vernon, and then you keep going straight to the trail's end in Manchester, and you take some roads, and you find the Cheney Trail. Have you been on the Cheney Trail?
Not yet.
Yeah, Cheney Trail.
It's good.
It's okay. It's nothing to speak of. It's gravel, and it goes behind people's houses and businesses and stuff. It's very weird.
It's fairly new. But
it's kind of,
and it's about to be connected to the airline, to the Hop River Trail.
Right. Yes. And so it's interesting. So we took the Cheney Trail, and then at some point, Cheney Trail ends, and you have to take roads to get back to Manchester Community College, and then you're right there. And that was a long day. I did get to marshal one woman. There was a nice woman named Sally. Poor thing. Her derailleur hanger broke. So, as a marshal, it was my job to make sure she was okay. And she had already called SAG, and SAG was going to meet her at Steeles Crossing. But she had to walk her bike. So Jonathan decided, I'll walk you. And I said, I'm walking with you. I'm a marshal. I have to do this. So we walked Sally to Steeles Crossing, and that was very nice. And then a great day was had by all. And then yesterday, the Tour de Mansfield was yesterday, and I was going to, usually, last year, my friend Martin and I, rode the northern half, the second half of the Tour de Mansfield, the day after it, because I'd only ridden the southern half the day before. And then we got as far north as Brown's Road, and I was not feeling it. It was chilly. It was sprinkling. I said, let's go south. And Martin's like, yes, let's go south. And you're tired. You rode a long way, and climbing up to stores just doesn't make sense. Let's go south and finish on the rail trail. I said, all right, you want to go to Grounded? And he said, yeah, let's go to Grounded. We went to Grounded and got hot coffee because yesterday, it's June, it was a hot coffee day. So I got an Americano and he got a coffee. And we missed Ashley Paradise, who sang again. Oh, well, what are you going to do? And Petey was there. Remember Petey? Petey of Petey and Gary? Anyway, so she was there. And I just missed Autumn Sear, who was there with a friend. Anyway, so that's what happened this weekend. Lots of riding. I do recommend go out and see the mountain laurels. The mountain laurels are peaking. We're going to do, our club is going to do our mountain laurel ride this Saturday coming. And if you can go up to the preserve in Union, you can go see the mountain laurels. The mountain laurels were peaking on the Hop River Trail. So if you go north of Bolton Notch, or west of Bolton Notch, whatever, going towards Vernon, they grow out of the rocks. They do that. They grow out of the rocks on the side of the trail, and they're beautiful. They're really gorgeous. And that is that the Connecticut state flower?
The mountain laurel is.
Mountain laurel, yeah.
Right.
Not the lady slipper.
No.
Okay.
Mountain laurel.
All right. It's the pitcher.
I knew.
I confused the lady slipper with the pitcher plant. The pitcher plant is the provincial flower of Newfoundland.
Right. The lady slipper is a wild orchid.
Yes. It is definitely a wild orchid because it looks like an orchid.
It looks like an orchid.
Yes. Right. So anyway. All right. So let's go ahead and talk about health things. I mean, talking about cycling is a health thing, but it was an exciting weekend. I hope you had an exciting weekend. I want you to get outside and go see flowers and things. Right now in our meadow in the backyard, we have beautiful daisies growing. They're gorgeous. We even have a set of daisies that are growing right in front of the garage, and I figure those would be the ones to clip because I keep driving over them. Daisies.
Yes.
The daisies are really cute. So I took some pictures of daisies, but I think we should have some daisy bouquets in the house. All right. So let's continue on with our talk of cardiovascular disease. And we were talking about cardiovascular risk factors in women. So we want to go on and talk about that. Let's see. So we had talked about a lot of the warning signs of heart attacks in women and men. There are heart disease risk factors for women, and there are genetic factors. If you already have some genetic factors, they can predispose you to cardiovascular disease. Diabetes is one of them. The thing with diabetes is when you have elevated blood sugar, if you have extra sugar in your blood, if the sugar doesn't go into your cells, your insulin is going to raise. Your insulin raises in response to the presence of the blood sugar. Insulin's job is to take your sugar and do something with it. Its first choice is to take your sugar, open up your cells, and send it into the cells. But you only have so much room in the cells. So the cells, when they can't take anymore, they become insulin resistant. So the insulin's like, oh, got to do something else with this. So the insulin sits there and turns your sugar into triglycerides. And then your triglycerides will rise in your blood. Triglycerides are prone to oxidation. And when you have fats in your blood that are prone to oxidation, they can damage the inside of your blood vessels. And that's no good. And so when you have damaged blood vessels, that's when your body goes, oh, blood vessels damaged. Let's send calcium, cholesterol, and platelets to the site to repair it. And guess what you get from that?
I don't know.
Cardiovascular disease.
Oh, that's me.
Yeah. But I mean, you didn't get it from having diabetes. You got it from... You probably have some, I'm not sure what the mechanism by which some people get atherosclerosis and others don't. I don't know if you have vascular insufficiency.
Yeah. You know, I worked with the Diabetes Association this weekend.
Yeah, right? You did Tour de Cure.
I did.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah. It's a thing.
Yes. And then my friend John Kramers, he works with the JDRF, the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation.
Right.
And somebody gave you an interesting treat over there.
Yeah, this was from Best Buddies.
Well, that was nice. A Best Buddy treat.
Uh-huh.
It saved me a chunk.
That's another thing I did this weekend.
Best Buddies. I know. You were all over the place. My goodness.
Busy guy.
If you have high blood pressure, that can predispose you to cardiovascular disease. Why? Turbulent blood flow bangs against the inside of your blood vessels, just like the Natchog River and Diana's Pool. Hmm. Bangs against the side of the blood vessels. Then you get oxidative stress. Your body goes to repair it. It uses cholesterol, calcium, and platelets, and it can block up the arteries once again. If you have ongoing inflammatory diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and other autoimmune conditions, that can irritate the inside of your blood vessels. Same thing. You get irritated blood vessels. You have oxidative stress because of increased inflammation. Same mechanism gets blocked up. When you have menopause or premature menopause, menopause itself is a risk for cardiovascular disease. What the heck? And why might that be? Well, it's because estrogen and progesterone are regrowing and proliferative. And so estrogen helps you to repair tissue. And when you don't have as much around, you can't repair tissue as well. So then you have oxidative stress, all the forces of oxidative stress that go on in your life anyway, and then you don't have the estrogen and progesterone to foster repair of those tissues. If you're depressed, depression can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. What's up with that?
I believe it.
So there, and there can be some spiritual reasons for that. I mean, in Chinese medicine, if you have a depression of the feelings in your heart, then your heart meridians are not going to work as well, and you're going to be more likely to have issues that way. But if you're depressed, then there's so many reasons why that could be. And one of them could simply be if you're depressed, you're less likely to get exercise, you're less likely to eat well, you're less likely to do the things that keep you out of cardiovascular disease. And so it may be as scientific as that. I wonder, too, if the neurotransmitters, the preponderance of neurotransmitters in your brain, when you don't have as many neurotransmitters that are uplifting, that those neurotransmitters are also responsible for keeping your cardiovascular health up. So if you have less serotonin, if you have less dopamine, your cardiovascular system may suffer in some way. So there's probably a number of mechanisms by which depression will lead to cardiovascular disease. Of course, if you have HIV, you're more likely to have cardiovascular disease. HIV is human immunodeficiency virus. And so if you have human immunodeficiency virus and it's uncontrolled, like it, the thing is, if you have a drug, if you're taking a drug therapy that makes you undetectable, you're probably okay. You know, you're not going to have HIV running around and making it more likely for you to have opportunistic illnesses. But if you get opportunistic illnesses, again, you're more prone to inflammation, and all the things that come from inflammation apply. Then there's preeclampsia. Preeclampsia is when you have abnormal toxicity during pregnancy that causes increase in, it causes your blood pressure to go up, and same thing that follows from blood pressure. I already said autoimmune when I was talking about rheumatic conditions, any autoimmune condition, because you have chronic inflammation, irritates the blood vessels, causes the blood vessels to do that, cholesterol, platelets, and calcium thing, and block up the arteries.
Why, when you try to pull something out of your brain, do you hit me?
I'm not hitting you. I'm tapping you. Because you're going to help to pull it out of my brain.
Okay.
Go figure.
Yeah.
Interesting. If you have breast arterial calcifications, that can lead to cardiovascular disease. I'm assuming that's because if you have calcifications in the arteries of your breast, they can move into other parts of your body. And when they move to other parts of your body, they can block those arteries and give you cardiovascular disease. Then there are lifestyle factors. If you weigh too much or are obese, that's a correlation, not necessarily a causation. You can be overweight or obese and not have cardiovascular disease. If you are overweight or obese, it's also possible that you have blood sugar dysregulation, or that you are storing toxins in your fatty tissue that are causing oxidative stress, which can lead to cardiovascular disease. And then there's the idea that the more weight you have on board, the harder your heart has to work to move your body around. So there's that it's taxing. It's simply taxing to your heart. And that's not always true, because people who are at a high weight can develop a trained heart, so they can pull their body around and they don't necessarily have cardiovascular disease. So I want to be clear here that overweight or obesity, just because somebody is overweight or obese, doesn't mean they're going to have cardiovascular disease. They're at greater risk for it, but it isn't necessarily the case. Somebody walks into your office and they are obese, and you'd be surprised what people look like who are obese. They don't necessarily look that big. They just have to have a BMI over 30. And BMI over 30 can look all kinds of ways. And you're like, oh, they look like they're well-proportioned. They're really obese. And you find that that's the case. And people can have different distributions of muscle mass and body fat that lead them to have a high weight. So you don't assume somebody has cardiovascular disease if they're at a high weight. And you don't assume that somebody who is at a high weight needs to lose weight. You talk to them about the whole person, about who they really are as a person and what's going on with them. Because let me tell you, fat loss is difficult. It's really hard. It's very few of my patients. They go on all kinds of programs, all kinds of training, all kinds of issues. And I mean, the biggest thing, and as far as I'm concerned, in fat loss is stress reduction. You have to be in control of your time and your life in order to lose weight. And if you're in a place where you're working at a job for more hours than you like, and especially if you're not happy about it, if you have beyond that job, you have to care for other people, like elderly parents or relatives or children. And if you have any kind of a commute, then it makes it very difficult to be at a healthy weight unless you really, really got it dialed in. And that's why most people in this country are overweight. More people than not are overweight in this country. That's 70% of people in this country are overweight. Something like 40% of people in this country classify as obese, which is just a BMI over 30, which is not that hard to reach. I mean, a few extra carbs a day will get you there quickly. And certainly lack of physical activity. So that's why we have things like Ride the East, I suppose. So anyway, just understand that your weight in terms of cardiovascular disease is fraught. It may or may not cause cardiovascular disease. I tread lightly when I'm talking to my patients about what's going on with their weight, because they're generally already upset about it. And the problem with weight is it's not something you can do something about tomorrow. You can eat a great diet tomorrow. You can get some exercise tomorrow. You can drink extra water tomorrow. But you can't move the scale significantly tomorrow unless you're very sick. So, and so people get really stressed out about it, and people get very frustrated because it really is hard to move the scale. And then that's why I encourage people, when you're thinking about fat loss, don't think about fat loss. Think about living a healthy lifestyle. That's way more important. Reducing your stress, being happy, loving yourself, getting good exercise, eating a healthy diet, doing stress-reducing activities. Those are way more important than whatever the number says on the scale. And if you do those things, you're going to be healthier regardless of what the number is on the scales. Here's a shock. Did you know that smoking is not good for you and it can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease?
Who would have known?
Yeah. So when you smoke cigarettes, especially if they're commercial cigarettes, they can have heavy metals in them like arsenic and cadmium. And guess what heavy metals do? They give you oxidative stress. So when you have oxidative stress, that irritates the inside of your blood vessels. And then that leads to
heart disease,
calcium, cholesterol, and platelets trying to repair the damage. So and it's especially bad if you're doing commercial cigarettes as opposed to organic tobacco. Organic tobacco is not sugar cured, so it doesn't have as much problem with oxidative stress. It's not good to smoke, but what I do try to get people to do is if they're smoking commercial cigarettes, at least switch over to organic cigarettes and then gradually wean from there.
So I have a question for you. Is that for tobacco products or all smoked products?
That is a very good question. So first of all, there's a different... organic tobacco is not as bad for you as commercial tobacco that has been sugar cured and chemicalized and has bleached papers with burning agents in them, because there's way more chemicals in it. If you're using unbleached papers, or you're smoking from a pipe and you're using organic tobacco, it hasn't been chemically processed in the same way. So it's not as bad for you as commercial tobacco that has been processed in that way. Cannabis is thought, and I can't speak for this 100%, but cannabis is thought to be even less dangerous than tobacco because there are a lot of antioxidants in cannabis. And there are antioxidants, and there's CBD and THC, which are they're actual anti-inflammatory compounds in cannabis. So even if you smoke it, your risk of cardiovascular disease and damage to your lungs is lower than if you smoke tobacco. Is it nothing? I don't know the answer to that. If somebody comes in and they have asthma and they want to use cannabis, I try to steer them away from smoking. I'm not a big fan of vaping of any kind. Why is that? Because you put oily juice into your vape canister and you inhale this oily juice, and you should not be inhaling oil into your lungs because oil can get sticky and can't get out, and you can get a lipoid pneumonia that is very hard to treat because it's not really a microbial pneumonia. It's you've got oil stuck in your lung, which you can't cough up and you can't get out. So it's very difficult to treat. So I'm not a big fan of vaping of any kind. That when people do cannabis, my preference is for edibles in, you know, an amount that works for you, or edible oils, you know, things that you can take a dropper full. Stress increases your risk of cardiovascular disease. Who would have thought? Because when you have cortisol, extra cortisol running around in your blood, cortisol breaks down tissue, turns it into sugar, so that you can run away from the bear. And if you have that extra sugar in your blood, it has to be metabolized. And once again, if you have too much, because you're not actually running away from bear, you're sitting at your computer screen or you're doing stuff that doesn't include burning up that sugar, your body has to then do something with the sugar, and it can turn it into triglycerides, into fats. And once it does that, the fats are prone to oxidative damage, and then you can get oxidative damage in your blood vessels from the oxidized fats. So stress, ongoing stress. And the other thing with ongoing stress is that if you're stressed, you can have higher blood pressure. And higher blood pressure, we talked about why that can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. If you don't exercise, you're more likely to have cardiovascular disease. It's a use it or lose it thing. There's a number of mechanisms there. One of the mechanisms is if you use the organs, they get stronger. Your body pays attention to them, lays down more muscle tissue, makes them work more efficiently. When you have more muscle tissue, you make more mitochondria. You have more cells. When you exercise your muscles, your body goes, ooh, she's exercising her muscles. We need to make more muscle cells. When your muscles get bigger, you literally have more cells. Guess what you get when you get more cells? You get more mitochondria. And guess what you get when you get more mitochondria? More energy, more electron transport chains. So you're going to have more energy. Everything, your whole body is going to work more efficiently. Including your heart. It's going to take some of the strain. When you have more muscle mass, you're going to take some of the strain off your heart because you have other muscles that are doing the work for your heart. Your heart itself also becomes stronger because your heart has more circulation going to it, more oxygenation, and your heart actually has more mitochondria too. And your heart exercise is what we call a positive inotrope, which means that it increases the efficiency of the heart. That means each time your heart beats, it is able to push out more blood. And when it pushes out more blood per beat, it doesn't have to beat as often. So that's why people who are very fit have low resting heart rates because their heart doesn't have to beat as often. So what happens when your heart doesn't have to beat as often? Less beats per year. That means you're not using it as much. That means you extend its life. How cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
The cardio exercise, you extend the life of your heart and your you. It's good. All right. So when you have cardiovascular disease, puts you at risk of other conditions, having a heart attack. A heart attack, as we know, is when you have a blockage to the coronary arteries, the arteries that feed the heart muscle wall. When they get blocked or spasm, then you do not get oxygenation to the heart. When it's temporary and it doesn't damage the heart muscle, it's called ischemia. When it damages the heart muscle and the heart muscle dies, that's called a myocardial infarction. And then you have death to tissue, and that can lead to rhythm issues, and it can lead to cardiac arrest, the heart stopping beating. So a heart attack is a lay term. It's not actually a medical term. The term is either you had a myocardial infarction or you had a cardiac arrest. Cardiac arrest is when the heart stops beating. Myocardial infarction is where you have damage to the heart, damage and death to heart muscle tissue. So then there's strokes. If you have cardiovascular disease or cerebrovascular disease, you're more likely to get a stroke. And a stroke is a break or an interruption in the blood flow to the brain. And the most likely place you are to get a stroke is in the blood vessels that feed the brain in the circle of Willis. And the circle of Willis, the most common kind of stroke is a Berry aneurysm in the circle of Willis. So what you get is atherosclerosis, cholesterol, platelets, and calcium build up in the circle of Willis. They make an aneurysm. An aneurysm is a stretched out spot. Then you get too much blood flow in there and it breaks. And that's how you get a stroke. So stroke, you have interruption of blood flow to the brain, and then there can be damage to the brain because you need to get oxygenation and nutrition to the brain. Heart failure. So heart failure, that's when your heart, again, stops beating. But also congestive heart failure is when you have parts of the heart that are not functioning as well as they're supposed to. And there can be a number of reasons why, that there could have been a previous myocardial infarction, or you could have cardiomyopathy, which is a breakdown of the muscle tissue of the heart. And when you, so you're at more risk when you have cardiovascular disease of heart failure, because you're having decreased oxygenation of various sections of the heart. If you have you're more likely to get a cardiac arrest if cardiovascular disease. Obviously, your heart can stop beating if it's not getting the oxygenation that it needs. If you already have an aneurysm somewhere in your body, so an aneurysm, as I said, that's a stretched out spot in any of your arteries, and stretched out spots in your arteries, if they get turbulent blood flow and get blocked and get pressure on them, they can break. So, and then you get an aneurysm. So an aneurysm is not necessarily, an aneurysm means that you have that stretched out spot. A ruptured aneurysm is the problem. That's what you're concerned about. So if you have any signs or symptoms of cardiovascular disease, you need to be in contact with a doctor of some kind, probably a cardiologist. Cardiologists can be helpful in diagnosing exactly what you have and getting you help for what you need. And then we naturopathic physicians have a lot of ways that we can support you as well. But depending on what you have going on, you need to be in contact with both of us. And it's a good idea not to dismiss signs of cardiovascular disease. It's a medical emergency if you have signs of a heart attack. For example, chest pain, tightness, pressure, or heaviness. Sudden and severe arm pain, usually in the left arm, but not necessarily. Sudden shortness of breath. Loss of consciousness. Heavy sweating or nausea. And a sense of doom. When you're having a heart attack, you feel like the world might be ending. It's very interesting how that happens.
So, well, it might be.
So when you diagnose heart disease, your doc talks to you about your medical history. They do blood pressure and they do blood tests, and they look at your cholesterol, your lipid profiles, your cholesterol and triglycerides. And they may do other tests like inflammation levels. So, for example, they might check your cardiac C-reactive protein. I also check lipoprotein PLA2, which is another measure of cardiovascular inflammation. They might check other kinds of inflammation like your SED rate, your erythrocyte sedimentation rate. They might check sodium potassium levels. They might check do a CBC. Your kidney and liver function are key to what your cardiovascular risk is. Your thyroid function, if you're hyper or hypothyroid, you can be more prone to cardiovascular disease. If they're very concerned that you might have cardiovascular disease, they'll give you an electrocardiogram. A resting electrocardiogram, a lot of PCPs will do that in the office. My PCP, when I have a physical, they do an EKG on me. And so far, so good. They might do an echocardiogram. If they listen to your heart and they hear a murmur, and a murmur is usually a sound that that's being made by a valve that isn't functioning 100% well. And so an echocardiogram can tell you if you have valve dysfunction. If there's a suspicion that you have cardiovascular disease, and generally they only will do this if they really suspect they have cardiovascular disease, like Ron got his an exercise stress test. They get you on a treadmill, or if you can't get on the treadmill, they'll give you a drug to increase the functioning of your heart, and then they'll do an EKG under stress. And depending on how it comes out, they may decide that you're going to go the next step, which is that you're going to need an angiogram so they see if you have blockages in your arteries. That you can do a coronary calcium score, which is a CAT scan that shows the level of calcium buildup in your arteries. I have colleagues who are not real keen on calcium scores because you can have a super high calcium score and not have atherosclerosis, but not have blockages, and you can have a lower calcium score and have blockages. How can that be? Because it depends the nature of the plaque. All it does is measure your calcium. It doesn't measure whether the calcium is jutting into the lumen, the inside of your blood vessels. If you have stable atherosclerotic plaque that is entirely underneath the endothelium, under the blood vessel walls, and you have blood flow going through there, you can have a calcium score of 1,000 and be fine. If you have a calcium score of 250 and some of that plaque is jutting out into your coronary arteries, that's bad. So, I mean, I have colleagues who they're not big on the calcium score. You can get an ultrasound of your carotid arteries in your neck. That's a carotid Doppler. And that can tell you about stroke risk. I had one of those last year and I had no plaque in my carotid arteries. It was great.
It's a good thing.
They can also do the ankylobrachial index. It's the ratio of the blood pressure in your legs to your arms, which I don't do that, but I haven't heard of that. And then, of course, there's the angiography, where they give you a specialized CAT scan that look at the blood vessels around the heart to see if there are blockages. And that's what they do. If you fail your exercise stress test, then you get an angiogram. You can get a continuous EKG, ambulatory arrhythmia monitor, which used to be called a Holter monitor, although the Holter monitor is different now because it used to be you'd walk around with all these electrodes all over your chest. Now they have a little unit, they just stick it to your chest,
yep.
And that's what you walk around with. It's just, you know, it's half the size of your cell phone, and they stick it on your chest.
Yep.
And then if you have an event, if you sense an event, you have an app that you can send a note to.
Yeah, I saw one of my spin clients with one of these on.
Right, exactly. Yep. And not only that, sometimes it's the other way, that there's somebody monitoring at the other end because it broadcasts, and they'll get a hold of the person if they see that they have an event of some kind of arrhythmic episode. If you can have cardiac catheterization, where they actually send a camera inside your artery and they look around and see if, and they can look that way to see how blocked your arteries are. And then there's an implantable loop recorder, which monitors, the implant is, it's implanted under your skin that helps to look at the causes of arrhythmia. So when you get treated, you might be treated with cholesterol-lowering medications, and that, of course, is controversial. You can be treated with ACE inhibitors that can help to lower your blood pressure, and ARBs, angiotensin receptor antagonists, that block angiotensin and can lower blood pressure as well. You might be treated with anticoagulants, either warfarin, which is a vitamin K inhibitor, or the 10A inhibitors like apixaban and rivaroxaban, which are, you may know as Eliquis and Xarelto. And those don't, those you can eat salad with because they're not, they don't involve vitamin K. You might be given aspirin, and aspirin is controversial because it definitely thins your blood. It's controversial as to whether it really prevents heart attacks. Calcium channel blockers can also be given. And then nitrates, remember, you know, you've heard of people getting nitroglycerin. Mm-hmm. Nitroglycerin helps to widen your blood vessels. And you know how I talk about having people do nitric oxide enhancers that you eat. So like beets and beet juice and watermelon juice help to increase your nitric oxide. Green leafy greens do that as well. They increase your nitric oxide so that you have wider blood vessels. You might, and if you have coronary artery disease, you might get a stent, which is where they put a coil made of metal mesh and they put it in a narrowed coronary artery and it improves blood flow to your heart. They can also do angioplasty, where they open the blood vessels that supply blood to the cart, and when they take out some of the plaque and then they put in a stent once again. And then there's bypass surgery. I'm pointing to Ron. He had that.
That's me.
And they take arteries or veins from other parts of your body and they turn them into coronary arteries. So, and then in Ron's case, they gave him, they used one of his radial arteries and one of his internal thoracic arteries. And they said that those arteries don't tend to get atherosclerosis, so you should never need this again, which is why they have him on statins. Go figure.
So, don't even get me started.
Don't even get me started.
I have other arteries that may clog in other places in my body, I suppose.
Yes, that's true. Right? Well, you have to keep an eye on your abdominal aorta because you do have some plaque in your abdominal aorta.
Ah.
You do.
Yeah, I know. How do you get rid of it? You don't get rid of it, do you?
I don't know how you, because the thing is,
that's the big naturopath question.
Well, the thing is, it's controversial. I mean, Dean Ornish used to help people get rid of their plaques, supposedly. And he had them on, you know, very low sugar. He did lots of fruits and vegetables and fish oil and exercise. And that's what he did. And they reversed their plaque, supposedly. I don't know if that's possible to do.
So do you dissolve it? I mean, how does it go away?
It probably goes away. I'm assuming you're reducing your inflammation. It literally probably goes away by you increasing your HDL, and your HDL goes in and pulls it out.
Ah.
Yeah, because HDL will pull the cholesterol. It pulls cholesterol out of circulation. So if you raise your HDL, your HDL can run around and pull cholesterol out of circulation and bring it back to your liver for processing.
Okay.
So the higher your HDL is, the better off you are.
So we're on the subject. Does taking CoQ10 raise your HDL?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think that's how that works. Statins do.
Yeah, I know.
But so do does cardio exercise. Cardio exercise is great.
But I do that already.
I know.
And I still have it.
I know. Well, you have a gene
thing. So what do you
do? Well, you also can stop eating sugar because sugar increases your it increases your LDL and increases oxidative damage, and some people are more prone to that than others.
Mm.
So if you want to if you're a woman and you want to prevent heart disease, it's not that different for men. Get your blood pressure checked regularly. Quit smoking. Work on your blood sugar. If you get your diabetes under control, maintain a weight that works for your body. Eat a healthy diet that's high in fruits and vegetables and lean, clean animal protein, or vegetarian if you want to do that. And manage your stress. This says limit your alcohol to no more than one drink a day. I don't agree with that. Limit your alcohol as much as you can. Have drinks on special occasions. Don't drink an alcohol a day.
Mm.
Yeah, especially if you have a risk of cardiovascular disease. There's cancer risk and blood sugar risk. It's just not worth it. Mm. Get your cholesterol checked. It's good to get your HDL up. It's also good to make sure that your cholesterol, your LDL cholesterol, is large and buoyant as opposed to small and dense. And how do you do that? You lower your sugar and you increase your exercise. If you have sleep apnea, get treated for that. Sleep apnea gives you increased risk of cardiovascular disease because you have poor oxygenation to your body, and you're more likely to have a heart attack if you have sleep apnea. So if you have sleep apnea, get it diagnosed and then get it treated. And, you know, if you have sleep apnea because you're very overweight, then work on the weight so you don't have to wear the CPAP, because the thing is, if you need a CPAP or some kind of a breathing device for sleep so that you don't have sleep apnea, it can save your life. It's really actually a good thing to do. You can discuss low-dose aspirin, although I feel like there are other blood thinners that can be helpful. I mean, I personally take natotrochotrienols, vitamin E with tocotrienols in it that thin your blood. I'm not taking actual fish oil, but I eat fish, and I'm taking SPMs, specialized resolving moderators. It's specialized pro-resolving moderators. And that's the part of fish oil that really is helpful for you. Shout out to Chris, who's listening. I don't know if he's still in Indiana, but hi, Chris. So there's other ways to keep your blood thin than aspirin that may be safer than aspirin. Because aspirin, there's some increased risk of stroke with aspirin. And I don't think there is with fish oil and garlic and vitamin E. Heart disease is more common in women than people think, and we have to watch out for it as much as possible.
It kills more women than men every year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's rough.
Yeah, okay. I remember reading that recently.
Here's something interesting that's about the microbiome, and if you have a healthy gut, it benefits your heart. So a healthy gut microbiome can impact your cardiovascular health. And there's a study that shows that if you have poor gut diversity, you have more, maybe that's what you should do, take a probiotic. I mean, you eat yogurt, but you don't drink kefir regularly. Maybe you should start drinking kefir every day.
I could do that.
Because you'll get more species. Kefir is, if you really want to get your variety of species up in your microbiome, you're going to do better with kefir than with yogurt. You can eat yogurt if you enjoy it. That's fine.
I do both. But I haven't had kefir for a while.
Kefir is actually better for you because kefir has more species and they persist in your body. So go to the store, get a kefir. Oh, he ate my finger.
You stuck it in my face.
I did. I was pointing at him to go. He did it again. I want him to go get kefir, and that will help his health. Okay. So yeah, Chris is still in Indiana. Hi, Chris in Indiana. He's going to ride with his son. His son has a fat bike. Nice.
Okay.
So anyway, there was a study at the University of Nottingham and King's College in London. They published it about gut health and linked to cardiovascular health, and they published it in the European Heart Journal. It says that diet and probiotics could be pathways to reduce the risks of cardiovascular disease. So take your probiotic or eat your kefir or drink water kefir. I've been enjoying that the weather's not so warm today, but I've been finding that I've been wanting more kombucha, and I like water kefir. So you can get an aqua kefir. And if you have a dairy issue, I'm finding now that I'm over a year out from my major vaccine injury symptoms, I'm able to tolerate more dairy, although I'm not going to go eating lots of dairy every day. Like, I'm still at the point where I'm putting, if we make sag paneer, we're going to have yogurt substitute. And when I eat yogurt most days, I eat coconut-based yogurt or oat-based yogurt. But I am having little bits of cheese and maybe a little bit of ice cream every few days, and just bites, and I take enzymes with it, and I'm doing okay with it. And if you buy kefir, I'm going to try to drink the regular kefir as well, but not, you know, maybe not every day. But anyway, there's the researchers looked at data from 617 middle-aged female twins that were on the Twins UK registry and found that the measure of artery stiffness was higher in women with a lower diversity of healthy gut bacteria.
Ooh.
And there was an association between gut microbe diversity and artery health.
Huh.
So kefir. Why do you drink it? The thing about kefir is kefir has a lot of diversity in it. It has, you have more species. You could have 10 or more species in kefir, and kefir probiotics are known to persist, whereas yogurt tends to kind of go through you. They benefit you while you're there, but they come out the other end.
So this also probably has some indication to open, or some implication to opening the door for women who are on crazy diets.
Oh, sure.
Because by not getting proper nutrition, they're risking heart disease.
Yes.
I mean, so I'm just assuming, but...
So the thing is, the way you get probiotics into your body, there's various ways to get probiotics into your body. What are the ways to get probiotics into your body? Let's talk about that. Okay. One of them, I mean, did you know that in Paleolithic times, they didn't have Whole Foods or the Willimantic Food Co-op? Did you know that?
Really? How about that?
And you couldn't go to the supermarket either.
But you could pick it in your yard.
Well, you could. Well, the thing is, we wouldn't be sitting here if Paleolithic people didn't exist.
Right.
And they had to get through and be healthy in order for us to exist.
Like for the gene pools to continue.
Yes,
to go
for
forward,
us to,
right?
to get to this day. They had to have probiotics on board, right. So they must have gotten them somehow. And did you know that it took? That we were on the planet for 200,000 years. We've been on the planet in this form for about 200,000 years. Only 13,000 of them have we had agriculture. And only about 5,000 or 6,000 of them have we had dairy. Because somebody had to convince a cow to stand still so we could milk it and take its milk. So nobody ate yogurt until 5,000 years ago. And nobody ate bread until about 13,000 years ago. So these are fermented things. So that means that before that, people got probiotics somehow, because they had to. So where did they come from? Well, the probiotics live in the soil. So how did they get from the soil to our mouths? People ate plants.
I was going to say vegetables.
Exactly. So if you eat healthy organic produce that hasn't been sprayed with pesticides and junk and has been grown in healthy compost, you're going to get probiotics that way. So if you go to the farmer's market and support your local farmers who are not using pesticides or chemicals of any kind and are doing healthy growing practices, a la big shout out to Brian O'Hara, and they are Brian O'Hara or they're mentors of Brian O'Hara, they're growing their food right and you're going to get probiotics from your food. Mm. So next time you see your local grower, thank them for the probiotics they gave you.
Mm.
I'm going to do that when I see Brian and Anita next. And also Jackie and Spencer.
And they're going to laugh when you say
I'm going to say thank you for giving me a wonderful microbiome because, you know, they're using terrific compost and they're rotating crops and they're using fish emulsion, which is going to give you more microbiome. So one of the reasons to eat organic produce, especially locally grown, properly raised organic produce, is the microbiome. That is how Paleolithic people got it. And you can get it that way, too.
Loose things.
Now, if you want to do other things, you can take probiotic pills. Probiotic pills will absolutely help you with your cardiovascular health. If you're not dairy intolerant, you can consume kefir. You can certainly consume yogurt. Yogurt is not bad for you if it's, you know, cow yogurt or, you know, animal dairy yogurt, if you're not dairy intolerant. You're still going to get probiotics from your yogurt. It's fine to eat it. It's just that the probiotics in yogurt, there tend to be maybe three or four species in yogurt when you buy it. When you buy kefir, if you look at all the species that are in the kefir doesn't, it tastes funkier than yogurt, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because there's more lactic acid in it.
I like it.
Because there's more, it tastes more cheesy because there's more species in it and there's more fermentation going on. So you can get more lactic acid. It's going to be funkier tasting. So it's going to be more sour. So you're going to, so when you consume that probiotic, when you consume kefir, you're going to get a lot of probiotic in. And then you can, of course, take probiotic pills. There are lots of different kinds of probiotic pills that you can take. And when you have more diversity, if you eat the white diet and you're eating nothing but bread and cheese and that's all you eat, you're not going to have a lot of diversity. If you're eating a poor quality, low produce, low vegetable, low fruit diet, and you're eating a lot of just maybe, meat and if you're eating a little bit of meat and you're eating a lot of starchy food, you're going to have poor diversity and you're going to have more likely to have diabetes. Lack of diversity in healthy bacteria has been associated with diabetes, obesity, and inflammatory stomach and bowel diseases. And there are certain microbes that are tied to a lower risk of arterial stiffening, and they're the same ones that are previously linked to lower obesity risk. So it's possible that gut bacteria could look at gut bacteria, and it could help you to learn more about a person's cardiovascular disease risk. So there's this guy, Michael Miller, at the cardiologist, and he's the director of the Center for Preventive Cardiology at University of Maryland, found that the stiffness of arteries is more likely to be influenced by gut bacteria than risk factors such as obesity and insulin resistance. So the probiotic is key. So is it possible that your atherosclerosis was building up before I got you off gluten because your belly was all messed up?
Could be.
Wow.
That's going back 18 years.
I know, but still, it went over a... maybe you're over a certain threshold. I don't know. So it builds on previous work showing an association between gut microbiota and cardiovascular disease. And inflammation, of course, impairs the functioning of blood vessels. And certain gut microbes lead to more inflammation. And then you have your endothelial dysfunction, which causes your stiffness, plaque formation, and hardening of the arteries. So there's all kinds of studies about this. So you would think that one of the things that a cardiologist should do is check a person's gut microbiome. So this is where we get into that measure, the TMAO, the trimethylamine and oxide, which is something that I have tested people for. So Dr. Regina Drews, who's a cardiologist from New York, notes that certain gut bacteria can convert choline from eggs and meat into this TMAO. So people who have an excessively high TMAO that contributes to a heightened risk for blood clot related events like heart attack and stroke. People who have elevated TMAO, you want them to get off eggs, and this is where eggs and red meat are problematic. Eggs and red meat are not a problem if you don't have a TMAO issue. But if you do have a TMAO issue, eggs and red meat are probably not. We should probably check your TMAO if we haven't done it already. Somebody should check your TMAO.
I have no idea.
Yeah, because unfortunately I can't. I can order it. I just don't know if your labs would cover it.
Yeah.
If you have elevated TMAO, you have higher risk of blood clotting, which is going to lead to more atherosclerosis. So should we get a probiotic prescription? Well, they're of course shy of doing that, but I'm going to recommend to my patients that they have gut diversity, that would be a good thing for them, because it's harmless and it's good for you to have gut diversity anyway. So while we're talking about TMAO, four-letter acronyms, we have a few more minutes. We'll just remind you about A and ADMA. ADMA is asymmetric dimethyl arginine, and it's an indicator of endothelial dysfunction. So when you have endothelial dysfunction, you're going to have stiffer arteries. And so what you need is more nitric oxide function. So beets and beet juice, the betalains in beets are really great at increasing your nitric oxide. So I tell people who have elevated ADMA that they should drink more beet juice, and it can help lower their blood pressure too. When you have the other thing, just as a shout out to my athletes out there, we're my athlete people out there, right? If you consume beets or beet juice right before a workout, it helps to open up your blood vessels. I keep forgetting to do this. If you take a beet shot or a beet chew or eat a little bit, well, really drink beet juice because you want to get a lot of the betalains in. It helps you warm up faster. You can also do watermelon and watermelon juice. And we're getting towards watermelon season. Watermelon juice, interesting, this brand watermelon water, it's hard to find in the stores. Sometimes it's in the stores and sometimes it's not. I think they're inconsistent about delivery. Maybe it's coming from California or something.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, watermelon has L-citrulline in it that helps to increase your increases. So if you have elevated ADMA, you can drink beets or beet juice. You can drink watermelon juice or eat watermelon. You can also take the amino acid L-citrulline, which you can buy, and that will help open up your blood vessels too. Leafy greens and dark chocolate also increase your nitric oxide. And then blueberry anthocyanins are particularly helpful. And you can get blueberries are very dark, and they have a lot of anthocyanins in them. So, and if you eat wild blueberries, you're going to get more not that domestic blueberries won't give you, anthocyanins, Donna Dufresne. But the low bush ones that are wild, they're smaller, so you're eating more skin, and the skin is where the anthocyanins, and so you're going to get more anthocyanins. They're particularly helpful. You can have the actual blueberries in fruit. You can have it in juice. You can have it in jam and different kinds of concentrates. So we still have more cardiovascular disease stuff to talk about. So we'll get back on it next week, because it is time now to wrap up. Please get out there and be outside. Go look at the mountain laurels. Get on your bike. Go for walks. Go for hikes. There's great places to walk. And just for your information, if you're not, you don't want to drive too far from home and you're in the more populated areas, the rail trail just west or north, however you rate it. If you start at Bolton Notch and you continue west towards Vernon, and you go for a nice walk there, you will see mountain laurels growing out of the sides of the rock faces there. And then if you look down, you got Valley Falls down there. It's very nice. So that's about where I saw it. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.